Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
It is like an old joke at this point, but it is because it is so true. It is speaking to a real true phenomenon, which is Nala and Simba were hot. We all had crushes on lions. No can get pride.
Welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, the podcast where we ask, whose fault is it that you're gay, babe? Who do we blame? Who is it? I'm Eric Williams, I'm your host, and it is another week in the gay ass universe. I am actually sitting here on my couch by my lonesome. Yes, Matt is in Atlanta, Georgia. We are apart for the first time in just about a year and a half, and I gotta say, I'm kind of living like the bachelor life. Yes. And by that, I mean I'm just watching the TV shows I want to watch and ordering disgusting takeout that he won't let me eat in front of him. Which, primarily, I mean Domino's. I do mean Domino's. And before you get... Just get off my jock, okay? I know I live in New York City, the best pizza city in the country. Well, you know what? Sometimes you want to go back to the time you were 9 years old and you gave the Domino's delivery person a $20 bill and thought to yourself, was I supposed to get change? I'm so happy you are here for this week's episode with Joel Kim Booster. He is podcast royalty, comedy royalty, gay royalty, and he even surpassed my already crazy high expectations. It honestly is an incredible conversation because it really runs the gamut. He is so funny. We talk about the time he went to PV recently and partied and met a boy that he's following to San Francisco for Pride. We talk about some Bravo stuff. You need to stick around for an Andy Cohen story or moment that will truly make headlines. And we talk about really vulnerable stuff, about how the past year has been tough for him. He lost his dad to COVID, how it's been tough creatively, but also just things about relationships. And it is such a full conversation that I really am so appreciative to Joel Kim Booster for coming on and being so candid, because I really think it is special. So if you don't know Joel Kim Booster, he is an unbelievable stand-up comedian, actor, writer. You've actually seen him on TV in Sunnyside on NBC, also featured on a whole bunch of late night shows. His sets are linked in the show notes because they're some of my favorite things I've seen on late night. It's The Late Late Show with James Corden. He's done Conan, been on Netflix, Comedy Central. He's also written for some incredible TV shows. Big Mouth, he wrote for the other two. Thank God it's coming back soon. Billy on the Street and more. You gotta follow him on social media at I Hate Joel Kim. That is I Hate Joel Kim. And make sure you let him know you love this episode. Follow us, subscribe. And if you want to follow me, I'm at Eric Wills, and the podcast page is at Gay Ass Podcast. Thanks for being here. Thanks for being queer. And if you're not,
nobody's perfect.
You know what? Every time there's like a tech glitch at the beginning, I just feel like it's just delaying the gorgeous gratification of being able to actually talk. And Joel Kim Booster, I know you get this a lot, but you are royalty to me in so many ways.
Oh, stop.
I am really not just buttering your biscuit. It's like you have the Midwest connection, the gay connection, the love of theater moment. You are a gay podcast royalty. I mean, it's just so much of it. And I just want to thank you for coming on to That's a Gay Ass Podcast. And also just say grateful that you are you, Joel Kim Booster.
Oh, well, thank you so much. And I got to tell you, I got nothing better to fucking do right now than be on podcasts. So here I am.
Oh, wow.
I am my own special creation, et cetera, et cetera.
And I also want to say, like, I know the listeners can't see this, but the exposed beams, the wooden moment, I'm truly impressed.
I swear to God, the ceiling in my back room is the star of the pandemic. Every Zoom I get on, I have to angle it up because this room, it looks like fucking dog shit otherwise. But the ceiling, my God.
Oh, my God.
People love it.
You know, in terms of ceilings, I'm going to say one of the best I've seen, especially this year. Oh, Joel Kim Booster, you are frozen.
No, I just didn't have a response.
Oh! Oh, my God. I felt like I was at Madame Tussauds for a second. Literally staring at just, you're doing it again. But maybe you're just like a... You know, your stillness, I guess you really are. Film is your medium.
Yeah.
I guess that's like one of the best ways to give me a complex is just to stare with a frozen smile and then not react to a thing I'm saying.
Yeah,
so,
there will be no volleying today. There will just be question, answer, that's it. I will give you nothing. No yes and.
Okay.
Just
okay.
Yes.
So great. First question. What year were you born? I'm going to ask you a question then, Joel Kim Booster.
Okay,
here's my question. How's your pride going? How are you doing?
Oh my God. I am so stressed and exhausted by the ticketing situation of pride. I cannot tell you how many days I've had to wake up early, how many I've begged on Instagram for tickets, just like literally like alms. Tickets to the Mighty Real pool party, please. Sir.
I mean, but I also think it like is spreading, it's running the gamut of pride events. There's also like now the shows are coming back. It just feels like the second there are things to do, it's fully impossible to do them because within about 4.5 seconds, so silly, but like Meg Stalter is doing a show in New York and I saw the show was sold out. I was like, bum. She announced that she was doing it again. And she just like, within 45 seconds, they would sell out, and it felt like, and I luckily got one to one of the late night shows, but like, that's not even a pride event, and it's fully booked.
Well, she is a pride event. Let's be real.
Meg
Stalter is a pride event. She is a one-woman pride float. She is Citibank throwing out rainbow-colored condoms. She is the moment.
I mean, I do think that she is the moment, and also she will have a full pride float in the near future.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
will it be her character from Hacks? Will it just be her doing a different? I mean, I'm not sure, but it will be. It will be
time
a Meg Stalter.
Yeah,
yeah.
I actually completed my Pride ticket journey today. I got the last event that I needed to get for Pride, and I'm doing this stupid thing where I'm following a boy to San Francisco Pride this year, and that's where I'm celebrating. And I did it so late. Literally everything was sold out. I got by hook, by crook. That is literally, and by waking up early as they released new tickets, I got every event, every party that I needed to get. And I feel so satisfied.
Wow. Wait, why is it stupid to go to San Francisco for a boy? That sounds magical. And I think that's the thing. I think it's the thing to do.
Yeah. I mean, it's good. I do this thing where I dress rehearse for disaster. And listen, we met in Puerto Vallarta. Classic love story. He was my PV boyfriend. Legally speaking, we're still boyfriends in Puerto Vallarta. that has not dissolved, but only in Puerto Vallarta. Mm. And he's moving to LA in August, and I'm going to be in New York for that period. And so I decided I would do this crazy thing of just like completely shifting my life and going to San Francisco right before going to New York. And we're just going to hang out and have fun and go on a real date.
I think that's actually incredible. It's just, you only live this one life, apparently. And I think that you're clearly, your body's telling you to go to San Francisco and see if this relationship can cross borders, international borders. And you're not going to find out unless you go to San Francisco and go to every Pride event with him.
Yeah. I mean, we're trying to be chill. I'm trying to be like, not go to every Pride event with him.
Sure, sure, sure.
Because I'm also ostensibly, the trip was planned because I have a lot of very close friends in San Francisco who I was also with in Puerto Vallarta and who wanted me to come. And so that was like my rational brain sort of justifying the trip.
Of course. And I also feel like, though, with dating in general, your entire body is trying to be chill while the other side of your brain is like, is this going to be the thing that makes A, fixes my life, or B, is a forever thing? Or
I'm fully prepared to get my ass kicked. I'm like I'm so prepared for it in a way that like it's not healthy. I mean, it's self-protection, but I just know that like these things never last, you know? It's so emotionally unsustainable to text someone every day post vacation at good night and good morning and FaceTime and send voice notes. And it's like, I'm like, when is the other shoe going to drop? You know, and like, that's what I keep waiting for. And again, it's like my therapist, all my friends are like, just enjoy it while it's happening, Joel. Don't wait. Why are you so focused on the end point, the disaster point of it? And that's just who I am.
Yeah, but I also
so that when it does happen, I can say, see, I told you so.
Well, that's class. I mean, truly tale as old as time is like the expecting it to go wrong because it protects you from when it does. But I think like every single relationship, vast majority are going to end, but some won't. And so giving yourself just a little sense of hope that it could last, even though. Very big chance I won't. Very big chance it's a romantic vacation Puerto Vallarta story. However, you are about to go into one of the best parts of it. And so I do agree with like enjoying it is not the worst thing you can do because it's got that high you feel when you're first falling for someone and going around a city that you're not normally in. It's like, oh, I'm jealous and I am also sending you all the positive vibes regardless of the outcome.
I mean, have you read Less, the book Less?
No.
It's a great book. It's a gay beach read that happened to win the Pulitzer, a couple years ago.
Okay. I'm truly reading it. I'm going to a beach vacation in 2 weeks. It's going to be on my list.
It's amazing. It's amazing. It's about a guy getting over a bad breakup, traveling the world. It's gay, eat, pray, love. The prose is fantastic, but there is a moment in it. There's a quote that I love from this book and I'm not going to butcher it now. I don't have it near me to read it, but it basically just says that like, you know, any amount of time is a victory and seeing just because things end doesn't mean that it was a failure. And I think like for me, like I haven't been this vulnerable with another human being in about 6 years. And so that is a win for me, no matter what happens with this guy. And I'm trying to make it about that. I'm trying to make it about my own personal growth, not about this boy specifically, but just about my ability to say, okay, I'm open to something more than just casual sex, which I haven't been in about 6 years.
Yeah. I mean, I love that so much. But because it's all of this is an experiment. It's like, you know what? What if you just see what happens without trying to end it before it does? And there, you know, there is a chance that opening yourself up and being vulnerable will not either teach you new things about yourself or lead you to a lasting relationship. But the baseline outcome is that you're going to learn something and move forward. Because I have to tell you, I had one of these stories that I've been with my partner for, God, I think about 42 years. It's been about 8 years, but like I met him like 3 months after I had one of these whirlwind romances. It was actually Gay Pride 2013. A friend of mine invited me out to this party and I just did not want to go. It started really late and I was having a sad New York summer, just like not a lot going on. So I ended up telling myself, you need to get out and just do something. I went, very, very cute friend of this friend was there. And I was like, I don't know if he's gonna be into me, whatever. We start flirting a bit. It's now 3 a.m, exchange numbers. I'm like, I'll never see him again. He texts me. We go out the entire weekend, every day of the weekend. We're making out all over Manhattan. I was never the type that was like, you know, overtly making out on the steps of a pizza joint. But like, that's where I was in the meatpacking district. And then we ended up sleeping together an hour before his bus left because he lived in Texas.
Oh my God.
And then I don't think I've ever even told someone this story because what ended up happening is I was like, of course, over the moon. I was like, this guy is gorgeous. He lives in Texas, though, which sucks, but it was such a magical weekend. And then he told me he was moving to New York. However, he told me he was moving to New York about a week after I met my now husband. And so I was like, fuck. And I literally, I mean, like, I don't even know if I've told Matt this. So if you're listening, babe, I like a one date in with Matt. Part of me was like, but what if like I'm seeing this Matt guy and like, am I missing out on my pride lover? Like, is this what I didn't know? What, and I ended up, of course, seeing Matt. This guy did move to New York. I ended up kind of like following him on social media and like, oh, and curious about how he was doing. I would always ask the mutual friend, we'll call him Brian. I was like, how's Brian doing? Like every time I saw her. And then finally the feelings wore down. Matt and I are obviously been together for forever and doing well. But like now Matt knows he exists. He doesn't know the specifics of the timing of the stories. But all this to say, learned a lot. It's such a good feeling to have that whirlwind. And then even if it wasn't meant to be, I think it may be the universe that led me to meeting Matt. I don't know. I met Matt out in line on the street. Like, who knows? Who knows if my Brian lover was the ticket to meeting a great relationship? I don't know.
It's impossible to say. I will say that I had my tarot read for the first time recently at a friend's birthday party. And they said that the third guy that I fall in love with will be the one.
And so how many guys have you been in love before?
This guy would be number two.
Oh.
And this is counting from the tarot. He said, from this point, you will meet three guys and the third one will be the one.
Oh my God. Where's this movie?
I don't know. But, so I've already blown through one. And so technically he's number two, but you know, there was no time limit put on. So who knows how long it will be between number two and number three. We'll see.
Do you regret having your tarot cards read, or does it feel empowering?
I don't regret it. And it doesn't feel empowering. It's a Rorschach test, you know, like I don't think it means anything, but I do think it told me, and my reaction to it at the time was very telling about my own, how I was feeling, you know, like just reading into that, but not,
yeah.
I don't think it was actually telling my future.
But that's why I think you're a very emotionally intelligent person that is able to kind of put it into a frame, because I will not go see a psychic, even though I love that shit, because I'm so fucking fragile that I'm like, if this person tells me that like anything was not the way I pictured it or thought it would be, or like, I mean, can you imagine if a psychic is like, actually, your career is going to fail. You're going to move in with your parents. I'm like, well, then I believe her. And then of course I will then move in with my parents because she said so. But I one day will go to a psychic, but I'm nervous of hearing something that will change my trajectory in a way that maybe it wasn't meant to be.
I don't think that's going to happen for you, babe.
I don't either, Joel. I need to up my Zoloft. Although, let me be honest, I just started on the pills, and I was just talking with last week's guest, Judy Gold, about this, that I am for the first time dealing with medication to help with the anxiety I've always had. And the psychiatrist I met with 3 hours ago said that even though the Zoloft isn't working, girly, we're going to just double your dosage and pray. And so stay tuned, Joel. I'm going to let you know if the Zoloft works.
Godspeed on that journey.
Thank you so much.
I've been on my own medication journey this year, and it has been an interesting one for sure.
Yeah. Well, I didn't realize how long it takes. I didn't realize it's like, yeah, well, you're going to first find out the first 3 months if you even have any side effects, if it's working. And then I thought this was a one and done, but Abby tells me otherwise. So listen, Joel Kim Booster, I want to say that I've always been a fan of your comedy, and I always love to watch your appearances. And I was, of course, kind of rewatching them today. And I have to say, like, all of your sets are so incredible. But you have one on James Corden that I think is like God tier. I don't know if you get that a lot, but it was just like every single joke. It was just like spoken to me. It was specific. It was brilliant. The audience was so on board. I think sometimes in those situations, the audience is just like such a random smattering of people that they're not exactly buying what you're selling, like just in people in general. But it was just the universe came together, and I thought it was unbelievable.
Thank you so much. That is the last time I think I felt like at the height of my power as a stand-up. It's all been downhills from there, but definitely I do feel that set is underrated, because it is like I feel like a lot of the early Conan sets were me introducing myself to the world. My special was very much that. And this was like sort of me in the vacuum of just comedy, you know, like it wasn't necessarily about me, like talking about my family, my upbringing, the experience of being gay and Asian in a white, straight, you know, world. It was just about me talking about my life now as it is. And that felt really, really good. And I'm, you know, really appreciative of them for letting me do some of those jokes because they were pretty out there.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's like a lot of your jokes, I think, are not only out there, but I think I love that they're like unabashed, because I think sometimes when you're afraid of pissing people off or whatever it is, like I, as someone who's also from the Midwest, when you say that you're from a stupid community, it was like, as am I, like 100%. But like, this is not an interesting question, but I am genuinely curious. Do you, when you poke fun at either Midwest or whatever it is, do you get either flack from people from there or your family, or how does that go?
Well, I will say my family has never seen me do stand up and never will. But I will say that like I perform a lot in the Midwest, and like I'm pretty good at enveloping people in this sense of like, well, not you, like everybody else, but not you in this room. You were smart enough to come to the show. So you're exempt from all of these broad generalizations I'm making about the Midwest. And that is, I think, one of my greatest talents is making people feel in on the joke, not the butt of the joke.
So then for your family, is it a mutual decision for them not to watch your stand-up, or was it more of a one-side thing?
I think it's mutual for sure. I don't need that kind of validation from my family, and I know that they won't approve, and I know that it would make them uncomfortable. And I think my brother has seen my stand-up. He recently told me that he saw the Corden set and enjoyed the Corden set. But beyond that, like, I don't think anybody else is super curious about it. They're very happy that I'm making a living. They're very happy that I'm able to support myself. But beyond that, I don't think that they're super curious.
Honestly, I think that's the key. I sometimes get nervous about things because my family does watch or listen. And I actually am like right now in this moment thinking like, maybe I'll just tell them to stop, because it like, I will like literally not tweet things because I know my mom will periodically go for 20 minutes on Twitter and everything I've tweeted.
Couldn't do it if my mom knew any of the disgusting, filthy things that I was saying online.
One of your jokes actually is talking about how God really did not want your bloodline to continue because the two boys are both gay. Did one of you come out like significantly before or after the other?
Yes, was it pretty clear? I blazed that trail. I came out. Well, I famously was sort of forced out at 17 because my parents read my journals. My brother came out about 7 years after that, I think.
Wow. I wonder, that must have been, I always wonder when two siblings are gay of what it's like for the sibling that has not come out yet to witness the other one come out, and what thoughts that put, or just what their thoughts go through.
Well, mine was so tumultuous. Like, it was so dramatic, my coming out, and like it caused so much strife for the entire family that I'm sure it traumatized my brother in some significant way into not wanting to deal with that, until he met a guy, you know, and that's what happened. He met a guy playing World of Warcraft online, and they're still together today.
Wow.
Brian, I think his name is, yeah.
See, look at that. It's like Puerto Vallarta is World of Warcraft scenario. I think that's how Matt, he ended up coming out to his family, because he also comes from a pretty religious family and did not want to broach it. And he ended up starting to see a guy in college and had a boyfriend. And then he didn't come out. He just said, this is the guy.
Yeah.
And this is what's happening. And I think they just like went from there. And I think that is a very relatable thing. And I've never said this on this podcast, and I think Matt will be okay with this, but like one of the tough things I think with coming out was also with grandparents, because it's just like obviously a different generation, and Matt has a very close relationship with his. And when I came out to mine, I was freaking out. He's 92 years old and, you know, wonderful. But when I came out to him, gosh, I don't know, 10, you know, 12 years ago, I was just convinced it was not going to be great. I mean, he is, you know, born in the 30s in Missouri, and he ended up saying to me at this Jewish deli we were sitting at, when I told him I was gay, he says, I appreciate you telling me,
But you know what, Eric? I don't love you any less. In fact, I think I love you more. And I was like the most shocked. I was beyond
That's
shocked.
Beautiful.
Beautiful. But basically, Matt was very nervous to tell his grandparents, who are, you know, from Georgia and religious. And he was very, very, very nervous and kind of put it off for the first, you know, few years that we dated. And then there was Christmas one year where I was going to be in town for the whole week for Christmas. And it just became apparent that the grandparents always come over and I was going to be in the house. And so that whole morning, I could feel the energy of the house was a little tense because I don't think anyone knew what was going to happen. And to their credit, these grandparents came in and were just the most lovely, meeting this like random gay Jewish boyfriend of their grandson. And they were, again, beyond expectation of how they would take it. I do think that there was something uttered to them before to kind of emotionally prepare them for it. And I do know that that is not the case that always happens. It's more the exception than the rule in many scenarios. But it makes it much more meaningful when you realize how it can go many other ways. And all this to say, it's...
Yeah, I mean, all my grandparents are dead at this point. But I will say my mom told my grandma at some point, and I was like, why did you do that? Because it really changed the contour of my relationship with my grandmother in a way where I was like, I was ready for this lady to die not knowing. She didn't really need to know. She was so old already, and like to get letters from her about like how she was praying for me, that's not how I wanted to live out the remaining years of our relationship. So I was like pretty pissed at my mom for that. Cause she, you know, I was not super close to any of my grandparents, but it was sort of like, that's not how I wanted things to go.
Yeah, I get that. I mean, especially if you know that the chances of a very easygoing relationship or reaction is not the case then. And especially if they're that old, it's like, who are we helping here?
Yeah. I mean, they were never, there was never a chance like they were going to meet anybody that I was dating. It just didn't, until that came up, it didn't seem like it would matter that much. But I will say, you know, this conversation just happened with my mom. So, you know, I lost my dad, a couple months ago.
Yeah. I'm so sorry. COVID.
Yeah. Not ideal. Sucks. But it really did sort of catalyst me into talking to my mom. I mean, I called her recently, and I had this conversation with her about my anxiety over my ability to write. I have not been able to write really, you know, through the pandemic, and we've never had a conversation that serious before pertaining to my work, and she was very supportive there. And, you know, this was after I met the guy, and it, not to sound too crazy, because I wasn't like, this isn't the one by any means, but I said to her, I was like, you know what, I met somebody. And I don't know if you'll ever meet them. I don't know if I'm in love with them. I don't know anything. But it did get me thinking, like, I know that you don't approve. But I just want to know, that is a part of my life we never talk about. And I want you to eventually be a part of that part of my life when that happens to me someday. And she said, you know, we don't see eye to eye on this. But God says to love everybody, and if you bring somebody home, we'll love them, you know, just as much as you know, Becky, my sister's husband, Dan. And it was really, really, and it really sucks because I wish I would have had that conversation while my dad was alive. Mm. And that is a lesson, I think, for anybody who's putting off having that tough conversation, because I think for so long, it was so easy for me to just live in this gray space with my parents where we talked around a lot of stuff. There was a big hole in the center of our relationship. Mm. With my career and my personal life and stuff like that. And we were on good terms. It was the unspoken thing. And I just, you know, it sucks. It sucks so bad that my dad will never get to meet whoever it is, whoever is lucky enough to make it through the gauntlet of emotion that I am and make it to the end and make it to the point where I'd bring them home. But don't put it off.
Yes. I think that's also beautiful in many ways, because I think when you do have the very tough conversation, it makes a starting point for feelings to change and relationships to change. Because listen, when I first came out to many people, it was you know, I love you, but I don't want you to have you're going to have a harder life. And that's going to be, and it's like, it was a lot, there was a bit of pity I received. And, just because they did not know that there were other places in the world and, or the country, that there were many gay people, was not such a crazy big deal.
Yeah.
And so I think like having that really tough conversation with your mom is probably beautiful, because not only does it change your relationship and give you something to look forward to, but also I think it gives her time to wrestle with it. Yeah. And when that time does come, I think it's going to be that much sweeter and more full, because it wasn't just it's not a reaction in the moment, but like, this is what we've talked about, and this is going to be treated with positivity and in a celebration.
Yeah.
So speaking of, though, kind of the growing up, the what shaped who we are, I when I ask you the question, whose fault is it that you're gay? Do you immediately go to a pop culture moment? Do you immediately go to an actor? Where do you go?
I honestly go to comic books. Run the gamut from Archie to DC to the Justice League to the X-Men, like all of it. I think like the first men that I was attracted to were artistic creations of that were in comic books. I mean, Archie was the first man I ever saw in a Speedo. Okay. Like, they were going to the beach in high school in Speedos, in those, yeah, Archie comic books. And boy, oh boy, would I flip through those digests to try and find the beach editions, because I was so obsessed with seeing these guys in Speedos with pecs. It was like the whole thing. And then, of course, like, superhero comic books came into my life, and it was like the spandex and the, you know, like, we talk about the male gaze, like, yes, all the women looked insane, but the men had some asses on them.
Oh my God.
It made you question reality. Some of these asses.
Well, what about in the, I know it's not a comic book, but the Batman movie with George Clooney, the suit,
yeah,
it's like literal erect nipples. It's
formative.
Like
formative.
Oh my God. And that movie, I mean, Uma Thurman, what's Robin the Twink?
Chris O'Donnell.
Chris O'Donnell, the thing is, I was very much into George Clooney, but Chris O'Donnell, there was something, I think it kind of maybe shaped what I was into, which is more of like the blue-eyed guy that will, you know, put me in a locker in high school. Like, I think that the thoughts I would have and the confusion that that brought, because I think I was probably like 11 when I saw that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and let's not forget Alicia Silverstone.
Oh.
I mean, the whole movie is an exercising camp to the nth degree. And I think Joel Schumacher knew that. And mm-hmm. I think we don't give him enough credit for knowing that. Like, it is a quote unquote bad movie, but I think he made the movie he set out to make.
He did. And I actually, this podcast was inspired by a series I did called That's a Gay Ass Movie, where I would break down why movies were gay as hell. And that movie I haven't done, but multiple people have requested it, because it is so gay. It is so campy. It is so a gay ass movie.
From top to bottom.
From top to bottom. I actually, you know, Jay Jordan was on this podcast, and he's super into comics as well. And I think that isn't it that it's very much, there's queer narratives in many of the comics? Like, isn't there like a gay superhero that's having its story told? Or do you know what I'm talking about?
I mean, there's a lot of queer narratives being told now. I think like it was a little bit more stealthy in the when I was growing up. I mean, X-Men is such a classic example of a queer narrative being sort of mapped onto a superhero story. Mm. I mean, like, the movie X2 had a coming out scene that was like beat for beat a gay coming out scene, but it was about him being a mutant, and the parents saying like, oh, have you ever tried not being a mutant? And it literally was not even a wink. It was a slap in the face. It was like, this is about being gay. And being born this way and all that stuff. And so, yeah, I think like even as a kid, before I even knew what I was, I think like I was absorbing these like queer narratives sort of in the ether of comic books.
Well, that's, I think, what you connect with is when you know you are different. Like, am I a mutant? Am I just gay? Mm-hmm. Like, I would rent the movie Camp from Blockbuster, and this movie is literally about a theater summer camp where there was a lot of gay kids. There was Robin Jesus at the beginning of this movie gets bashed because he's wearing drag to the prom. And I knew that it was kind of weird that I was so into this movie. I would watch it secretively and like rewatch it. And I connected so much to him being bullied like that, but I was not smart enough to put all of it together. I was just like, wow, this is a really engaging movie. I wonder what's going to happen to his plot. Like, I did not put the pieces together. And until when I finally did, I was like, oh, no wonder I wanted to fuck Jafar in Aladdin. Like, it's not super difficult, but talking about these cartoon characters, do you now as an adult, a grown ass man, do you think it's odd to want to fuck these cartoon characters? Or is it just like still makes sense?
No, I don't. I think it's totally legit. I think it's like completely within the realm of possibility that I could fuck a cartoon character.
I think it is.
The technology is going to get there sooner or later. The way that VR is happening right now, I mean, come on. I'm going to fuck Batman.
You are going to feel the penetration of Batman in mere months. I mean, I've heard people say, like, watching Lion King, like, why is Simba hot? He's a full-on lion.
I mean, yeah, it is like an old joke at this point, but it is because it is so true. It is speaking to a real true phenomenon, which is Nala and Simba were hot. We all had crushes on lions. No kink at pride, okay?
No kink at pride. We had crushes on lions. Yeah, I'm honestly trying to go through my memory banks. Like, I mean, Prince Eric and Little Mermaid too. It was just like, sure, the dark hair, the blue eyes, the pecs. Why do they give these cartoon characters pecs? I mean,
pecs.
Just like,
I mean, a whole
Archie
generation. All we want is pecs. It's all anybody wants now because of these cartoon characters.
I agree. And I'm talking about like pandemic darkness. I went through such a dark period where I had nothing going for me or going on. And the only thing I would do, and I've talked about this before, is I would work out because at least I felt like I was like accomplishing a single thing in a day. Mm-hmm. So while I was like a dark place emotionally, I was like getting the pecs I wanted for the first time. And I was like posting my naked form on the internet, but still feeling like a piece of shit. And then I ended up getting busier and whatever. And I do not work out anymore, but it's like, it's all checks and balances, babe. It's like, God, I want those pecs back, but I guess I do like having a better mental situation. But do I want the pecs instead?
It's all a trade-off. I gotta say, I look better than I ever have in my life, and I feel shittier than I've ever felt in my life. So
I think that's the thing, that like I told a friend once, I said, if you see me posting from a Planet Fitness, it's a cry for help. If I'm at a gym, it's like there is something going on there.
I mean, I don't necessarily know if there's like a correlation for me. I will say I woke up this morning, I had a full anxiety attack, and I went to the gym and I felt so much better. I worked out with my adorable straight trainer and he really put me at ease. And like,
straight trainer? Who are you, Andy Cohen?
I wish. No, he's great. He's got a gay brother. He loves to talk to me. Wants to go out, going to visit me in New York. Wants to go out to the gay bars. Is a prince of a human being.
I love him.
I think a Joe Rogan listener, but you know, nobody's perfect.
Nobody's perfect. He can't be everything to all people. Mm-hmm. Speaking of, if Andy Cohen propositioned you to sleep with him, would you say yes or no?
Well, you know, I would say yes. That's all I'll say.
Oh my God. Is this something you talk about a lot and I'm just like late to?
No.
Okay. So you would say yes is what you're saying?
I would say yes. Absolutely.
And do you think if it were to ever happen, do you think it would be good?
Yeah, I think so. I've been on his show. And he exudes the kind of confidence of a man who is good at sex.
Yeah, I agree. And like, listen, I would honestly, I think if Andy Cohen were to proposition me, Matt would be like, yes. I mean, like, listen, would that happen? Probably not. But like, I can say right now, I enjoy thinking about it.
Well, and I just got to, the only problem is that if I I ever did, I would take so many videos from inside his apartment to send my friends. Just like, I'm in Andy Cohen's house. You know, it would be so bad. It would be so embarrassing.
But honestly, I could kind of see you being the most incredible power couple. Like, can't you? Like, you go to an event together and you're both looking gorgeous. And then, like, the blogs are going nuts. Male Genital's exploding.
Yeah, maybe he's number three. Maybe Cohen is the third guy.
That might be the title of this episode, is Andy Cohen's the third guy. But I don't know if a single person will understand that. Wow. I do want to shout out that one of your tweets that I found to be incredibly spot on relating to Andy Cohen and Bravo is that you said the non-white Real Housewives deserve hazard pay.
Oh my God. What is happening to the women, especially the non-white women on all white franchises?
Oh my God, Joel.
The emotional labor is out of control.
Did you watch the New York episode with Luann? Oh my God, Joel. I just, like, it's tough. It's very tough. And, like, you could see it on Luann's face when she had this horrible reaction, completely negating this woman's feelings. And then, you know, she went home after filming, talked to someone, woke up the next day, and realized, I'm the bad guy here.
Oh, for sure. And I think it was her daughters, too. Because there's a scene at the table with her daughters where they were like, say upset, mom. You know?
Yes.
Like,
don't I think say angry.
I think the daughters understood. And I will say, this: there was something really chilling about the way Luann at that brunch was like, oh, I'm not talking about race. Like, she in a way that suggested, like, I'm not getting canceled. Like, if I touch this, I'm going to get canceled. And, like, she still did.
Because she knows that her thoughts are problematic. Because she knows she's not. And that's the tough thing about some of these women, is that you, like, sometimes you love to hate them, but sometimes you just, like, you're so entertained by them. But then when you really find out their true thoughts, like, wait, are you a bad person? And this is, like, I'm implicated in your bad thoughts. Like, my friend was a tour guide for the Real Housewives of New York bus tours, which lasted, I think, about truly dream job. And she was so good at it. But I went to one of the press tours I needed to fill this bus, and Luann showed up to, like, make an appearance, and she rode next to us. She rode next to me and Matt. And I walked away from that being like, you know, sometimes you shouldn't meet your heroes. I mean, it just, like, she was, like, being not, she was being Luann in a way that was like, yeah.
She was having such a good season until this episode, I will say, or these last two episodes. You know who I thought was playing it perfectly? Because Heather sort of overplayed her hand in a big way.
Overplayed.
Like, reads How to Be an Anti-Racist once, and then suddenly, like, it was obnoxious, the amount. Like, I was like, babe, we get it, you are awake,
we get it. But also, that was tough to see, because I've been a Heather stan since she was on, and that made me immediately be like,
I don't get that from her. I think she's so beta. I think she adds nothing.
I think I like that she was head to head with Bethany, but I think, like, she did it in a way that she wasn't completely stomped upon. However, I interrupted you. You were going to talk about someone else.
Oh, but I think Sonia is playing it really well. It feels effortless. It really doesn't feel like she's, like, putting it on for the camera. It doesn't feel like she's trying to position herself as an expert by any means.
Yes.
She's just being sort of effortlessly listening and learning and just, like, trying to do the right thing. And and it's sort of the reverse of Luann, because she was having a tough season up until now. I was worried about Sonia. It was not fun to watch Sonia.
No.
But now I think, like, she's handling the Ebony stuff with aplomb.
She is. And I think I had a flashback to Leah had a event for her clothing line, and Sonia was, like, really cozying up to all of the black people at this party. And I remember thinking, like, is she tokenizing? Is she? But then I remember, like, it felt like, actually, I just think she's just, like, loving her night and loving these people. And I think she's just, like, I think Sonia's a lover and coming from a place of love. And that's why it translated to just, like, she's not overstepping. She's not.
Even the way she was handling Leah, who, by the way, I think Leah is losing me a little bit this season.
Of course. She's having, as Brian Moylan says, she's having the terrible twos.
Yeah. This often happens when they come in high on their own supply, when they know that they were fan favorite last season, they really yes. feel like their shit don't stink and they can do whatever they want. It happened to Leanne Locken. Mm-hmm. It happened to Heather on Salt Lake just mm-hmm. into the reunion.
Yeah.
I think like people really lose themselves when they become such a clear fan favorite. And it is interesting. It'll be interesting to see how season three goes for Leah, because I do think she'll come back. But like, you can tell that Ramona and all the rest of the ladies are sort of pulling their punches around Leah because they know that she sort of was the queen of last season.
Oh, yeah. And they do not like that she was so beloved.
It'll be interesting to see how that shifts and how the conflict will play out in Leah's third season, because I don't think she's going to... I mean, the not voting stuff, brutal. Brutal.
Well, I'm very nervous that they're having an episode centered around watching the election.
I don't need to. That was prior to what I'm experiencing right now emotionally. That was the darkest period of my entire life.
The week leading up to the election?
No, I will say like the election and then the week of uncertainty after the election.
Oh, my God.
So dark. So dark-sided. Actually, I would say darker than what I'm experiencing now.
Yeah. That for was sure. horrible. I mean, I would the sleep deprivation, which if anyone knows me, I'm the monster of a human when I don't get enough sleep and restful sleep. I was just like staying up at night, just hoping they would call. They wouldn't. Matt was turning the TV on at, I would say 23 hours out of the day. It was just on the news. And it was like, I forced him to turn it off at one point because it was affecting me so badly. And then finally we were like, okay, I think it's getting close. I'm going to go take a quick shower. I will. And then hopefully it'll just be like, we can go out and celebrate. And then while I'm in the shower, they called it. And I was like, you gotta be fucking kidding me. I've had my eyes glued to this television for the past 6 days or whatever it was. And like a devastating story is that my same friend who was the tour guide of the Real Housewives bus tour, she went out to celebrate. We were going to meet in Brooklyn, and then she rode her bike there and fell and broke her hand.
Oh my God.
I was is just, we just can't win. But she did, like, to her credit, got her splint, and then we went to McCarran Park, and it was a full, insane show.
I mean, like, it was like COVID was over.
Oh my God.
That moment. It was like we were all vaccinated. It really did. Like, in WeHo, like, I was just, like, marching down the streets of WeHo, like, everybody was out, spraying champagne. It was, coming out of the darkness in such a huge way, I can't even believe.
Well, that's, I think, why there's, even as we're like transitioning out of the lockdown situation, of just like, it does make things feel so much sweeter. But of course, there's a lot of anxiety with coming back. Do you feel optimistic of, obviously, the pandemic has been very tough with writing and just like how horrible it's been. Do you feel anxious about breaking the seal, or do you feel kind of excited to get back into it?
I mean, since I've been vaccinated, I've been out and about.
Yeah.
I've been out there. And socially, I feel okay. I think it's just, you know, I just don't feel quite as funny as I did before the pandemic.
Yeah.
And that's really tough for me. I don't feel quite as quick. Things don't remind me of other things. And that's the bedrock of comedy, Eric, is things reminding you of other things. And that's not happening. Oh, the gardeners are here. And so I feel like maybe slightly less engaging as a social entity out and about, but I'm still forcing myself. I am happiest when I'm around people right now. And so I'm really pulling myself out of my bed every day, every weekend to be around as many people as possible.
I think that's great. Right, right. I mean, the moment I hit the 2 weeks of the vaccination, it just like... It wasn't as big of a change as I was hoping. Just like, wow, I'm all better now. I have no problems. But it did, like I wanted to just go to a fucking diner's. All I wanted to do was like eat like pancakes in a restaurant for whatever reason. And I was able to do that for the first time like a week ago. And there's two sides to that. I don't know if people listening like agree with this, but I feel like one side feels amazing, and then the other side feels so crazy that it doesn't feel more different than it, or it doesn't feel more momentous and monumental. And so I think it's kind of like when you see a good friend that you haven't seen in a long time, but it feels like you just pick right back up. I think that's like, maybe that's just like what eating a plate of pancakes is for me. Is it just like, it feels great, but it's as if we never said goodbye. What are you looking for? What were you looking most forward to? What was making you go craziest when you were, was it just being around people?
Being around people. I really love to party and I love to dance. And, it really, like, being in PV was the first time really that I'd gotten a chance to do that openly. And, like, you know, I was a good boy throughout the pandemic. I didn't do shit. Mm-hmm. And I did a lot of crosswords with friends over Zoom, a lot of Zoom game nights. And boy, was I ready to fucking take my shirt off and dance around to some pots and pans. You know, yeah. Like, that is what I wanted more than anything in this life. And boy, did I get it. And it just felt so good. I felt like the most like myself. Some of my best jokes have come as a result of something I've screamed into my friend's ear on the middle of a dance floor while I'm rolling my tits off. And, like, that was happening again. It felt like a part of my brain was activated in a big way.
You know what's funny is that I was actually invited to this party, this Pride party in New York, and I was really trying to get tickets to go. But of course, as we've said, the tickets were impossible to come by. So we ended up not going, but the person that invited me was like, do you like to roll? Is that, I sound like I'm 50, it's 80 years old. They were asking if I did Molly, and I will be very frank and honest. I have never done Molly. I've had a mushroom situation, you know, love a marijuana moment.
You're an of the earth drug user, and that's fine.
Of the earth drug. I really feel grounded by the earth. But do you recommend Molly?
I do and I don't. It's not my top drug. I am I struggle with the come down, so I don't do it often. I'm not a somebody who can do it like three times in a weekend, although I have in the past. I've paid for it dearly. You know, I think three times a year or so I'll do it and really enjoy it. But there are definitely different drugs that have less of an impact on me emotionally that I prefer.
So when you met this guy in Puerto Vallarta, was it like a dance floor where eyes were vibing?
He was friends with the guys that I was with. From San Francisco, and we met, and like we were introduced, and we had like a fun little conversation, and then later on I saw him coming out of the bathroom, and he's so gorgeous. I did sort of write him off as, like, you know, not somebody who'd be into me. Mm-hmm. And I went in, and this is where we dispute, because I said to him later, I was like, wow, I'm so glad you made a move. I was so surprised by that. And he was like, what are you talking about? I didn't make the move. You made the move. And I was like, what are you talking about? And he was like, you went in to kiss me. And I said, no, you went in to kiss me. And it really was, like, very sweet.
Oh, my God.
Both of us sort of had the same feeling about it. And just incredible kissing. We both agreed right off the bat that, like, if the kissing chemistry is not there, then there is nothing there. There's just nothing there. It is the bedrock.
It is the bedrock. I have to tell you something that when I had a kind of fantasy moment where I hooked up with an older guy, I was in college, and I was so jazzed. I was like, he was hot and rich and had this like gorgeous apartment. And then the second we started kissing, I was like, oh my God, you're bad. You have been on this earth twice as long as I have. And you are a bad kid. How is that possible?
Yeah, a lot of people like to say, like, oh, you know, they're not a bad kisser. They're just not compatible with you. And I say no to that. I reject that. I think that good kissing is objective. I do not think it is subjective. I do think that there is such a thing as bad kissing universally. And do you prefer, I will say, there's two kinds of bad kissing. There's eat your face bad kissing, and then there's lips closed, no entry bad kissing.
Non-kissing.
I sort of prefer eat your face, because I feel like it's easier to dial someone down than it is to dial someone up.
Oh, interesting. You know what? Joel, I disagree. I think because from my experience with this guy, it was eating my face. And I think, like, it was hard for me to be like, put it back in your mouth. Close. I think if there was the tight-lipped, the nun kissing, I think with my introduction of different additions to the kissing would maybe signal to add. But honestly, I think we're both right. Well, listen up. I want to ask a very important question. The world's ending. You can only save one character actress. Who do you think you would save?
And do they have to be living?
No, we can bring them back.
Okay. Because I would dig up the corpse of Madeline Kahn.
Oh, yeah.
Hoist her on my back and carry her across whatever finish line I needed to save Madeline Kahn. Because she was actually going to be sort of my second answer for what made me gay. I mean, she was probably the first character actress that I like really recognized and said, wow, this character actresses are for me. Specifically, like, don't give me the lead. Give me this woman who gets it. I mean, the trifecta of What's Up, Doc, Clue, and Young Frankenstein. I mean, there is nobody who does it better.
You know what? I agree. And I also picture Madeline Kahn, like, if her body were not decomposed, I'm sure she's buried in the most gorgeous outfit. When you take her out of the grave, sling her over your shoulders, I'm sure she's the jewels. I think it's maybe velvet. What color gown is she wearing?
Teal.
She's wearing teal and she's got a kitten heel. And I think that Madeline, I mean, and honestly, she's probably still roaming this earth somehow. So to get her physical body back won't be too hard.
No.
Well, listen, taking a page out of Danny Pellegrino always asks guests at the end of his episodes about favorite Mariah Carey song. I'm going to try this for the first time. I'm famously very obsessed with Whoopi Goldberg. Do you have a favorite Whoopi Goldberg movie or moment?
I mean, yes. And unfortunately, it is the one that I'm sure everyone comes back to, which is Sister Act 2.
Thank you.
I mean, I wish I had a more exciting answer for you.
No,
I really
no.
do.
There's nothing more exciting than Sister Act 2 Back in the Habit.
But it really holds up in a really special way. There is nothing like it. I just like, I think many have tried to replicate the energy of it, but she is so good in that movie. And I think it is a rare sequel that it surpasses the original in many ways. I just think so many great things. Lauryn Hill before she disappeared. You know, it just is. It's incredible.
Incredible. And also someone tweeted, like, I don't know, 6 months ago, and I was in like a pretty dark place in the pandemic. They tweeted that people who say Sister Act 2 is better than 1 are wrong, and the first Sister Act is better. And I was viscerally angry. I was like, how dare you talk about my family? It was like, that's egregious. Of course, Sister Act 2 improves upon the original and nothing's better.
Nothing.
Did you ever see the Broadway musical?
I did. Didn't love.
It was a tough time. Tough time. Well, I guess we're going to end by pouring one out for the Sister Act Broadway musical. Joel Kim Booster, I want to thank you so much for coming on. The time flew by. I could truly speak with you for hours. You are an inspiration, an icon. You are the moment. And I hope you have an amazing rest of your pride. And thank you for being amazing.
Thank you so much for having me. I had a blast.
Thanks for listening to That's a Gayest Podcast. Remember to follow us on Instagram at Gayest Podcast. Subscribe, follow, review, do the whole thing. Also follow Joel Kim Booster at I Hate Joel Kim. Follow me at Eric Wills. And please spread the word and get ready for next week's guest, because I don't think you are ready. Ooh! See you next time, my friends. Bye!
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.